Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Mullen, joined by Jack Spencer, Jacob Kanzler, Simon Schuster, our special guest this week, Peter Spadafore. And Peter, I noticed that you've got various hats. We're going to say we've got various hats in front of you here because you wear various hats and you will be putting different ones on during the various discussions.
That's right. Thanks for having me today.
Let's start with the big news this morning. Brian Kelly obviously taking steps toward a run for governor. He has a webpage up now on his Facebook page. He's got Brian Kelly 5/30/17. May 30, 2017. The countdown has begun. We're going to presume that this is when he is going to announce part of the Mackinac Policy Conference that he's going to run for governor. We're just presuming that at this point, but I think it's a pretty fair assumption. He's got an ad out on the internet, a video. It's an hour or a minute long. Presumably, this is a $500,000 buy, according to the Detroit News. That's a heck of a lot of change to put on the internet. Jack, what's your impression on what's going on here with Brian Kelly? It's fairly obvious that he's running for governor, wouldn't you say?
Well, yes, and I think it's what you would expect from Brian Kelly. It looks very organized and like it's been thought out ahead of time, probably taking a page from Governor Snyder's campaign book on getting out there early with a big buy and going after the image that he wants to try to create. So I would think this has probably been, you know, in the works for quite a while, and it's probably the one thing you can say is I bet you it's very well thought out.
I just got a text here from Brian Kelly. He just tweeted me that, in case I missed it, there it is, his video on his own webpage. Simon, when you watched the ad, what was the first thing that struck you?
Well, I think, Governor Snyder really, his 2010 campaign was really marked as his ascension as an outsider. But I think that the overtures to the Republican and conservative bases, the Republican establishment in this ad were very explicit. He champions right to work. Obviously, it's still a divisive topic among a lot of Michiganders. And he also doesn't resist, perhaps pulling somewhat of a subtle punch against the, another presumed gubernatorial candidate, Bill Schuette, by saying grandstanding is just not his style and he's not one to shout from the rooftops his accomplishments.
That's kind of interesting. I wonder if that is kind of a subtle dig. He also puts out there that he is the father of an autistic child, kind of makes a personal touch there. Obviously, he's trying to define himself before anyone else can define him with, what do you think? Flint Water was supposed to be. That was the segue into Flint Water, by the way. Before anybody could tie him into Flint Water, that was my point on that one, Jacob.
Oh, thank you, Kyle. It's coming out and kind of maintaining his the brand he's kind of built up for himself as someone who champions maybe not the issues that are, mainstream or popular, but the ones that mean to him, in terms of special education and people with special needs. And then also he kind of pivots again to some of those conservative principles, right to work and taxes and whatnot. So kind of getting out front and trying to say who he is, and he's got more than a month to do so.
So this puts the end to the question of whether Brian Kelly was really interested in running for governor. I think that was an open question for some time. Now it's pretty clear that he is. So we're taking a look at the field just in general here, Jack, with Bill Schuette's pretty clearly going to run. Looks like Pat Kolbeck is going to run. Jim Hines, a Saginaw doctor, has already put his name in there. But I wanted to ask you this question here because I think one of the big issues will remain in 2018, Donald Trump. So the question is, did Brian Kelly support Donald Trump?
Well, actually, he pulled his support back.
The Access Hollywood video.
Yes, and he pulled back on that. I don't know whether that necessarily hurts him in the primary. It's going to, with some people, I suppose, some core people. But really, I think it's more important to me. I think it's more important for him to make sure he comes out and defines his own identity, something separate from the governor's. And I think that's far more important in terms of going into the primary, that he becomes a personality in and of himself that has certain things where, he may speak out. I would think he may speak out a little bit differently in some tonal stuff and so on. He may see him, considering who his main opposition is, Bill Schuette, you may see him start making a few more comments on national things. But I think the big thing with Brian Kelly is he's got to assure primary voters that, no, this is not just a carryover of Rick Snyder.
And we're going to talk about differentiating between him and the current administration a little bit later. But I wanted to touch on this still, the subject, Simon, about whether Brian Kelly supported Donald Trump. Because while he pulled back his outward support right after that Access Hollywood video, he conceded later that he actually indeed did vote for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I mean, he did say ultimately that he wanted to stand by his party, which is, you know, when it comes down to a question of party loyalty, that's always important. But I think also in his video, he also differentiates himself from Donald Trump and the same measure of differentiating himself from Bill Schuette by saying that, you know, he touts his accomplishments and that he says that he's more about action than words. And I think that when you see the first 100 days of an administration that has really struggled to make significant headway on its agenda, that this is something that he's hoping will resonate with some of the perhaps Republicans that have been disencouraged.
And so I wanted to bring up Trump because as we're looking at Republican primary voters, and I'm not talking about Flint necessarily right now, because obviously Kelly would have to get through this primary before he gets into the general election, at which Flint would become an issue. I don't think necessarily Flint becomes a huge issue in the primary. But as I'm looking this out, I'm kind of mapping this out. Brian Kelly was a big supporter of John Kasich, a more pragmatic type of governor, I would say, somebody who was okay with Medicaid expansion. He was a supporter of that. He helped write the new business tax. He got rid of the personal property tax on manufacturing equipment, that kind of thing. So he was, let's kind of just put him in kind of that Kasich category. Pat Kolbeck was the head of the Ted Cruz operation in the state, so he kind of comes from that platform Republican standpoint. I think Bill Schuette, at least initially, was of that blue blood Republican establishment type, kind of like of the Jeb Bush mold. Now, of the three, I would argue that Bill Schuette was more out front in supporting Republicans and Donald Trump after Donald Trump won the nomination, but certainly not before that. So I just mention this because I think that there is an opportunity here for another candidate, and I don't know if it's Jim Hines or it's somebody else out there. I'm curious if there's somebody who runs toward Trump and is more outspoken, has the kind of outsider cash, the type of, I guess, ego that Donald Trump presented and was very well-received here in the state. I mean, Donald Trump did win Michigan. He won it in the primary. He won it in the general election. Is there somebody who is more in line with Trump than the three that we have talked about? And I think that's going to be a question moving forward for myself. Jacob, I wanted to move to you now on a subject that Jack just brought up, and that is differentiating Brian Kelly from the current administration. We actually saw something on this front. Wasn't widely covered at all. We just found out about it over the weekend. What happened here with Brian Kelly?
All right, so just a little background here. This issue is concerning the state's plan to comply with the latest federal education law, or ESSA. The state superintendent turned it into Governor Snyder to approve. And so Governor Snyder signed off on this and sent it to Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos with two things that he'd like to discuss more. Maybe, I don't know if it's a criticism or opposition, but he said, let's pull these out and talk about these things later. One of these was the A to F system, and another thing is dealing with special education. So, but the Governor Snyder still signed off on this plan and sent it to the federal government. We hear from Brian Kelly, who posted on his personal page that he would sent a letter to Betsy DeVos to pull back the plan that was already submitted for further review, citing one of the issues that Governor Snyder raised for further discussion. And so you have something a little different. Governor Snyder was still okay sending this plan to the federal government, noting the special education issue. Brian Kelly thought it was important enough to pull back for improvement and tell people about it.
Well, now this is kind of interesting because Brian Kelly doesn't have the power to get that application back, right? I mean, it seems like this is more a symbolic statement than it is anything that he could practically do, right?
That's actually a great question I want to explore today because I'm sure this is very unusual in terms of a lieutenant governor asking for an application back, that since he's presumably part of the administration. So,
well, let's bring in our guest now. And Peter Spadafore works with the Michigan Association of School Administrators. And Peter, I know that you saw this letter. What did you make of what Brian Kelly did?
I thought it was interesting. You know, MASA has supported pulling that application back and not submitting it to the federal government. We thought we needed a little bit more time to get it right. 8F was one of our major concerns. I'm not sure we had exactly the same concerns that the Lieutenant Governor did, but it was certainly an interesting dynamic that was being played out on letterhead. I mean, you look at the letterhead, it's got Rick Snyder's name at the top of it as well. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I don't know that the Secretary is going to respond to this. If she does, I'd be very interested to see what the result is, because we do think the plan needs a little bit more work.
To my point earlier, Brian Kelly doesn't have the power to bring that back, does he? I mean, that's superintendent or the governor, right?
That would be my understanding. I think we're in uncharted territory here on this one.
Well, let's talk about some other issues that have been talked about quite a bit over the last several days, and one of them has to do with MPSRS, the Michigan Public School Employees Retirement System, that the debt just seems to gradually increase despite our best efforts. Latest numbers have the debt at $29.1 billion in unfunded liability, and Senator Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff wants that addressed as part of the budget discussion.
I don't disagree that that debt needs to be taken a look at, but closing out the system, which is kind of the undertone of all of this discussion, mm-hmm. is not the way to do that. In fact, closing out the system adds about $550 million in the first year of unfunded liability to the system. The current hybrid system, which is offered to all new employees as of the most recent reforms to MPSRS, reforms in air quotes here, you can't see me on the podcast, is fully funded. We're fully funding that system. There's no unfunded liability on the current system. So the misnomer is that we're going to close that system out and all the problems go away. In fact, that's couldn't be further from the truth. It exacerbates the unfunded liability issue in addition to the teacher shortage issue by devaluing the benefit.
But you take a look at these numbers, and it seems like it just keeps increasing. And if you're on the conservative end of things, you would say, we're not, even though it's getting better, it's still increasing, and there's a little bit of panic here.
There is a little bit of panic, and the ways that you address that are some of the reforms that we've put in place over the last few years, curbing health care, changing the system so the benefit isn't as robust, looking at ways to pre-fund some of those costs. The governor and the legislature in recent years have done a great job of pushing for reforms that make sense. In fact, we've in this budget seen a lowering of the assumed rate of return, which is one of the reasons our unfunded liabilities go. We were anticipating 8% return on MPSRS. That's unrealistic. Take a look at your own retirement investments. Are you seeing 8% on a regular basis? So lowering that assumed rate of return will help decrease that unfunded liability, but it will require us to put more money into the system. The fact of the matter is we've disinvested in MPSRS in a number of different ways, whether it was removing money from the system to help pay other debts in the state over the last 20 years, or removing employees from the system. Every time an employee comes off the payroll but is replaced by an employee who's not on MPSRS, that is a stranded cost that's left unpaid. Whether it's through a charter school or a traditional school that's privatized food services, they're all ways to save money. But the fact of the matter is that adds to the liability. Mm-hmm. And the reforms that we're talking about are not going to fix that problem.
But if you close the MPSRS system, that is an event that pressures future administrations to address it. Whereas I think the argument from at least the Mackinac Center that I heard is that we are going to have as many as 8 different governors between now and the year 2036 or 2038, whenever Snyder says that MPSRS will be fully taken care of. In that time, priorities could change, the benefits could change, this hybrid system could expand back into a full pension. There's a lot of things that could happen, but once you close it, it's closed and done with.
It's closed and done with, but to the cost of $24 billion over that time period. That's what it's going to cost.
And there's no new people coming in to help shoulder that. That's all state money.
Correct. You're going to get to a point where the pension obligations are so great and not funded by incoming cash that we're going to be just spending a pay-as-you-go system on the retirement system. That's not good for anybody. So it's a wonderful talking point that we've got so many years between now and then, but the fact of the matter is retirement systems in the state are based on long-term planning and long-term goals, not 5-6 year talking points.
All right, Peter, I'm going to have you take off your MASA hat here a second. We're going to put on the Lansing School Board hat, and I want to bring this up because we're beginning our regular look at local ballot proposals, and the city of Lansing has a significant one out here, and I just want to kind of just touch on the subject in general to talk about why we're seeing Lansing School, East Lansing Schools, and other schools across the state consistently continue to put on more things regarding bonding, millage increases, sinking funds. Why are we seeing this?
Well, first, how's my hair?
It looks great.
Okay, took the hat off.
Better than mine.
All right, awesome. Well, I think you're going to see bonds and millages and things like that go on indefinitely. You know, when we switch school funding systems over to the Proposal A system, more state funding, rather than asking the voters for operational millages, we can't do that anymore as a local school district, but we can ask for capital millages and sinking funds and things like that. There are certain exceptions, and we can get into that if you want, but capital is left to the local district. So there's no statewide funding system for capital. There's no capital outlay like you get for universities and community colleges. There is a requirement that we pay for the school buildings at the local level. So you're going to see, as buildings age, my district, we set on a bond project about 6 years ago and finally passed it a year ago in May to renovate 27 of our buildings. That's all of them right now. We closed down a few at the tune of $120 million. When we look at our unmet capital need, it's over $500 million in the Lansing School District alone. And that story can be translated out across the state in places where you haven't seen millages in a while. And that's why you're seeing them. You know, even neighbors to the east have a bond proposal coming up, and I haven't taken a serious look at it. It's not my district, and I wish them the best. But I think that you're looking at, it's been a while since they've renovated their schools. They have needs as well. I mean, whether it's new demands from the classroom, as we looked at Lansing, you know, our buildings were on average eligible for AARP membership. So we needed to take a look at, were they serving the interests of students in the 21st century classroom? We were looking at classrooms that were built with basically a 19th century classroom in mind. I just sat in a panel where we picked the furniture, and it was so interesting to see how different the furniture was just to accommodate different learning styles.
Just not the old school desks, huh?
No, they're all tables that move and chairs that are adjustable, and you can make small working pods and large group discussion areas. We've even gone so far as to renovate the classrooms themselves so that they're more open but also have adaptive space for group work and group think, you know. I don't remember the millions of dollars that will be spent on technology infrastructure across the district just to accommodate devices. Mm-hmm. You hear people talk about one-to-one devices in classroom. Well, it's no good if the technology is not there to support the bandwidth. So we're looking at all that kind of stuff.
And the reason I bring this up is the discussion about Proposal A, because inevitably that becomes a discussion. School funding, what do you think about any type of tweaks or reforms or what have you with school funding?
I started this new analogy. We put the Michigan Merit Curriculum in 2006. It's been 11 years, and we're now looking at a subcommittee to reevaluate the Michigan Merit Curriculum, see if it's still working, see if it needs to change, see if there needs to be a wholesale change. I don't know what the answer is going to be, but I think we're going to have a serious discussion about that. Proposal A was twice that long ago, and we haven't had that serious discussion at the legislative level. And I don't know that we will. It's a complicated discussion. It requires that long-term look at funding. You know, how long did it take to get Proposal A passed? I don't have to answer that question because I was nine. But there is a number of factors at play that might prevent that from happening, whether it's term limits or, you know, the tax climate of the state or whatever it is. I think that it's hard to have that long-term discussion. I mean, you and I just talked about the MIPSRS discussion, 6 years versus 2038. I mean, that is the kind of the mentality is, do we look long term or do we look at what's in the next 5 to 6 years? And I think school funding is a discussion that's going to require a long term look.
All right, Peter, I'm going to have you take off your Lansing School Board hat there. Thank you for that. Now we're going to put on a new hat, candidate for Lansing City Council. And the reason I bring this up is we've got a lot of listeners in the Lansing area, and we're going to have a filing deadline on Tuesday for people who are interested in running for office. And this is a very constant thing, people filing for office, and surely there will be people who file Monday or Tuesday. But give us a little primer on what we're seeing so far.
I think the number of candidates implies that you're seeing some interest in this race and some change needed in the city of Lansing. I don't know what change exactly everyone's looking for, but I think you look at city government that's been the same for roughly 12 years, and folks are tired of it. There's 8 people running for the at-large seats. There are 5 people now running for mayor. Each of the ward races, we've got 5 people in the 4th ward. We've got 4 people in the 2nd ward. City clerk Swope is still unchallenged in his filing status, and I expect that probably won't change. But you've got a lot of people interested in getting involved, and newcomers to the game as well. You know, I don't think of myself as a long-term Lansing politician, but I've been elected before, and of the people on the list, there's only a few of us that fit that criteria. So you've got a lot of people interested in getting involved in politics, and I think they're ready for change. I don't know if that's something coming from the national level or the state level, but certainly here in Lansing, people are clamoring for new government.
And I was taking a look at the Detroit City Council list and saw quite a few people interested in running for mayor. You know, we know of Mike Duggan and Coleman Young, but there was certainly a lot of other names on there. You mentioned five names for Lansing mayor. We know Andy Shore. Who else is on that list?
I've got Councilwoman Judy Brown Clark, Harold Lehman Jr.
Harold's making another go, huh?
Harold's going to give it a shot.
He can't let an election season go without running for something, can he?
Well, when you buy the signs, you really want to make sure you get the use of them.
He wants to bring his door back, I think, doesn't he? Remember when he left city council, he took his door with him?
I recall the story. I don't remember that it...
Well, anyway, he wants to bring his door back. Anyway, we got Harold. Who else?
Danny Trevino, and then Michael Joseph Gillenkirk. I don't know. I've not read up on Mr. Gillenkirk yet.
Okay, and so the at-large, you mentioned eight people. Who are the incumbents?
The incumbents right now would be Judy Brown Clark and Kathy Dunbar. Councilwoman Clark has filed for mayor, so she's ineligible for the at-large seat, and Councilwoman Dunbar has not yet filed. All of sort of indicators are that she will. It's just, Councilwoman Dunbar has done things on her own schedule and timeline, and we respect her for that, and I think we'll see her probably file tomorrow.
Okay, and so you've got Peter Spanifor as a candidate. Who else is on that list?
Christopher Jackson, Justin DeBoer, fellow school board member Guillermo Lopez, Michael Ruddock, Yanis Jackson, Evelyn Petch-Vasquez, and Alexander Rusick.
You're not running as a tandem with Lopez, are you?
I'm not, no. Mr. Lopez and I filed independently, and I found out when he told me.
Okay. And then for a city council, we've got Jessica Yorko is not running again, right?
That's correct. And that one's generated the most interest for the ward seats. There's five folks running, relatively newcomers to the political world, although Brian Jackson has run for county prosecutor, and I think he's applied for a few appointments before.
Okay. Well, very good. And then second ward, right? Is that the other
one? Second ward, yes. Tina Houghton, one of the only incumbents to have filed so far. She is going to duke it out against three different folks, Jim DeLine, Julie Rodacker, and Jaron Green.
Interesting. Well, Peter Spadafore, you can take off your hats now. Your hair looks beautiful. Thank you very much for that insight. Before we go, we've got one last thing that we wanted to touch on. Simon, you happened to be at the Capitol on Saturday, and there was an event going on. Tell our listeners what you saw.
Yeah, well, Saturday was the March for Science on Earth Day, and it was there were a number of rallies held throughout the state. Lansing's attracted about 2,500 attendees. There's two Democratic gubernatorial candidates there who spoke, Gretchen Whitmer and Abdul El-Sayed. And, you know, they gave the generic topical but sort of, obviously campaign-inflected speeches that you would expect. But the thing that they didn't realize is that they were not getting the most political bang for their buck, because about 60 miles away in Ann Arbor, there was a rally of not 2,500, but 10 to 15,000 people. And I think that this really speaks to some of the disconnects that we're seeing in the Democratic Party, especially in the wake of the 2016 election. It kind of underscores for me that while Yusuf Rabi was at this event, because he is an Ann Arbor representative, there was no Democratic candidates. And I think the fact that there was such a strong turnout in Ann Arbor and not Lansing, which is, the natural political capital, shows that Democrats really need to understand the difference between the different social groups that are making up their party. There is an intelligentsia out there that is, the academic and cultured portions that do not always translate to, where the political power may be. And if they do not become more aware of that, I think that it might bring trouble for them further down the line.
Did they have exhibitions or exhibits or...
Yeah, they had a fair number of tents set up. They had some nice Michigan native species that people could look at, frogs and snakes and things like that. And there were some other groups, like the Progressive Caucus of Mid-Michigan was at this rally as well. And so they're trying to, the events were cast as nonpartisan, but it's clear that there was a certain political alignment, which kind of demonstrates the depths of the polarization in our country. I think that, scientific facts become up for debate.
Did you see any signs out there?
Oh, a whole number.
What was your favorite?
I don't know if I could pick one, Kyle.
Oh, all right. Give us a couple memorable ones.
I saw one. I flew United to get here. That's how important this is.
Peter Spadafore shoots and scores. All right. Well, I think we'll close it on that one. Thank you, Peter, for joining us on the podcast. Simon, Jacob, and Jack. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.